First of all, I want to thank Thin Air for inviting me and having me. This is my first time in Winnipeg. So Winnipeg is kind of mythological in my head. I have certain associations, but one association that I have that's very personal, or to me, and you might know it, but I don't know how many people know it. Winnipeg was where Groucho Marx met Charlie Chaplin. And that must have been the late 20s, early 30s. Winnipeg would have been part of the traveling comedy scene, you know, various vaudeville acts and so on. And Groucho was here, and he met Chaplin, and he went back to the rest of the Crazy Brothers and said, you got to meet this guy. And then they subsequently met, I think, in Vancouver later that year. So maybe not that well-known bit of Canadian history, but that's my vision of Winnipeg. So here's my game plan. I'm going to read you like two, maybe three poems from this thing, and then I'm going to read a story from this thing. I know, it's a little embarrassing to have this many books out. I'm sorry. But that's the way it is. Anybody have any like mortal objections to that plan? Okay, well, we'll start with this one because I mentioned Groucho and it has a line from Groucho in it. So let's start with that. This poem is called Pajamas Pyroclasm. Now that you're tired of me, now we can talk. Reckon just how straight the jacket, how near the miss. Now we can separate the socks, distinguish latent patterns. When you always ask, how do I look in this shirt? It's too much, even once. Bare, pursuant to an exit, I'm going back in the closet where men are overcoats. The way you wear my clothes wore well on me. Fit. And speaking of background microwave radiation, why extinguish such wan lights as permit any felon recidivist opportunities? Nay, promises with eventual reconciliation, the sly conservation of matter. Laundry and lava, the same volcanic etymology. This may be covering the same ground, my sweet Katya, but ever reshaped by loving telluric arguments flow. Katya was the name of a wife and a couple, a French couple, who were famous for, famous is maybe not the right word, they took amateur film and footage of volcanic eruptions, and they were eventually consumed together. They got too close. But the film, if you see them walking together beside these rivers of lava, it's startling to watch. Let's try something different. This is called Declensions. What she does with her knuckles, what the differences in height give my neck, what sounds stream from the spawning bed, what amphibious releases, what thieves of uncounted sheep, what everything depends upon. What undoes the smile? What we pray don't rise? What gives away the intruder? What eventual passing does not sound like? What are held by shepherds? What needs resolution? When it is given and seen to be given, when it reminds one of another, when it is bountiful, when it tastes of defeat, when it is covertly revealed, when it is just a matter of fact. When the light falls where necessary. When it is not the contrary. When it is great, but still. When it's sprung and does its thing. When it turns. Should I do one more? One more, yeah. And then we'll get to the crazier book. This one's self-explanatory. It's called Harmed in the Making. In 1911, a Navy cook in Amsterdam attacked Rembrandt's The Night Watch with a knife. In 1913, an art historian in Moscow struck Ilya Repin's Ivan Grozny and his son Ivan three times with a knife. In 1914, a suffragette in London took a meat cleaver to Velázquez's Roque be Venus. In 1956, a man threw a rock at Da Vinci's Mona Lisa. In 1978, a man in Amsterdam attacked Van Gogh's Les Berceuses with a knife. In 1985, a man in Russia threw acid onto Rembrandt's Danae and then cut it twice with a knife. In 1987, A man in London fired a sawed-off shotgun at Da Vinci's The Virgin and Child with St. Anne and St. John the Baptist. In 1988, a serial vandal in Hamburg splashed acid on three paintings by Albrecht Dürer. The same man had previously attacked paintings by Rubens, Rembrandt, and Drost. Also in 1988, a man attacked Barnett Newman's Who's Afraid of Red, Yellow, and Blue 3 with a knife. In 1996, an art student vomited in carefully chosen primary colors on paintings by Raoul Dufy in Toronto and Piet Mondrian in New York. In 2007, a man in Milwaukee stomped on Vanini's The Triumph of David. In 2009, a woman in Paris threw a mug at the Mona Lisa. In 2011, a woman in Washington attempted to tear Gauguin's Two Tahitian Women from a gallery wall and pounded it with her fists. So I do teach. I don't teach creative writing because I wouldn't know how to do that, but I teach literature. And one of the things I try to get my students to see, is the question, where do the words come from? Where are they coming from? And that's not just a question of perspective, because of course it's partly perspective, but even if the words come from me, they often don't come from me, because we repeat cliches that come from somewhere else. Just think of the way, for example, business has changed our language so deeply that we borrow their metaphors and rely on them without even noticing, and not to mention those of other forces. And I guess when I wrote the story, I didn't realize it, but I think what I did with the story was I turned that question, where are the words coming from, into a story, because I began to think about where words come from. I've never read this one out loud. I've no idea how it goes, because it's going to be kind of confusing because the words are inside and outside. You'll see. We'll try it. I appreciate your patience. It's called Alternate Route. From her window, and by the way, this is one of the longer stories in this collection. This collection's pretty short. Pieces. I think there's a story in here that's one sentence, but they vary. But this is one of the longer ones. You didn't want to hear that, did you? From her window on the idling bus, Kay watches the man and woman in conversation on the corner. The woman is gaunt, with a pinched face, and the man is unshaven and bulky, the shorter of the two. Neither has gloves or scarf, and he is not even wearing a hat. The woman looks to be caught up in a bitter harangue, her right hand cutting the air again and again. The man says very little and looks now and again up the road as though half-heartedly expecting to see something there. Certainly looks like she's giving him hell for something. Now, where did that come from, giving him hell? Not an expression she would use. Since her mother's death in the fall, these surprises come out of her mouth. She files it, mother tongue. She coined that back in the ward where the doctors rightly did not attempt to speak to her. Why did the French chef commit suicide? He lost his huile d'olive. Got a million of them. And her memory obligingly shows her the crooked, guileless smile of the pyromaniac with inexplicably long flowing hair. The reason everybody's lighters were taken away. Despite the general and very low-key solidarity on the ward, it was hard not to hold that against her, that and a few nights of bad sleep. Vacant seats ahead of her are passed by as a woman with gray streaks in her hair and a duffel bag joins her in the back. Kay instinctively turns to the window, avoids eye contact, resumes watching the giving of hell, still proceeding. When the bus arrives in Montreal, it will be 1989. Time travel. The shuffling of the duffel bag prevents concentration. It's going to happen. She braces for the conversation. It's going to. Like a diving bell, she says, reaching past Kay to lightly touch the window. This bus is like a diving bell, gone deep and watching the silent scenes unfolding there. Kay immediately resents not just how the notion of the bus as a diving bell has immediately supplanted the notion of it as a time machine, but how the two notions gladly merge in her mind. Submerged, descending into the future, she decides to look the situation in the face. The woman, still looking pastor out the window. He's older than 30 for sure, but Kay is bad at this sort of guesswork. Really quite bad, and it's possible she could be in her 40s. Seasoned, as mother tongue would have it. Her eyes were crystal blue, and her features soft, but not unworn. Kay prefers to guess at professions, but has a hard time with this case. Teacher, maybe? Why does she think that? Going home or away? The woman asks, without turning to look at Kay. Montreal, away. There's the sound of breathing, and Kay wonders if it's her own, because it sounds very plausibly like hers, but she's not used to hearing it so clearly as she is just now at this very moment. It's just a conversation. Not even that. Entirely manageable. You're very polite not asking me that same question, which might seem nosy. Kay and the woman are looking at one another again. Some of us can't help it. I'm Aviva. Kay removes her mitten and takes the outstretched hand, mutters her name, an easy name to mutter. But I'll save you the trouble of asking. To be honest, Aviva smiles a crooked smile, I'm on the run. Madness, Kay knows, entices, allures. A polite little sip from the proffered drink means that the cup will thereafter be always thoughtfully refilled. Allow a premise, and the bar comes down, as the subsequent logic's roller coaster carries you away, with no chance of jumping free. She knows. And still, she says, that must be inconvenient. Too smart ass? Seems not. That might have been a chuckle. Kay initiates a semi-surreptitious, one-handed dig in her backpack for a Walkman. I can't answer questions, so I'm wanted for questioning, says this Aviva woman, rightly. Go on, ask me a question. Kay doesn't want to oblige, but out it comes. Did you do something illegal? And even more promptly comes the reply, three. You did three illegal things? Suriname. You went there? Are you from there? Polypeptides are strings or chains of amino acid residues. Somebody on the bus coughs long and earnestly. You see, says Aviva, I can't correctly answer questions put to me. You could just not answer, says Kay, annoyed. She clutches the discovered Walkman and draws it out of the bag. Just a conversation that's finished. Over. I've tried that, and it doesn't work. It's actually impossible for me not to answer a question. As soon as somebody asks me something, bang, I have the answer immediately, only it's not the right one. The batteries in the Walkman are dead. They lost their huile d'olive. Just a conversation. Just a conversation. Your hands are shaking. Are you cold? Kay snatches her thick mittens back from her lap and says nothing. It started when I was a teenager, probably just a couple of years younger than you are. Though she wants to think of something else, Kay is not entirely pleased with what the maitre d' of memory serves her. 16, and making a hurried raid on her parents' liquor cabinet, grabbing something in the back that they won't miss, Tanya and Bridge waiting, calling. The party, a flash of noise and smoke, and then the long embracing of the toilet, as a drowner clutches a life preserver, heaving and heaving. Her older sister's laughter the next day. How could she have chosen, of all things, a bottle of bitters and drank almost all of it? Little wonder she... On television? No, it was Aviva talking about television. Did she say she was on it? A game show contestant? Oh? Someone at the network, a young, eager to impress person to the right people, bothered by the sheer weirdness of many of Aviva's answers, made a bizarre discovery. What landlocked country shares borders with Argentina, Bolivia, and Brazil? Aviva! A bear. No. Sorry. Dwight, I think you buzzed in next. Her answers exactly match the correct ones, in order, for the questions being posed to contestants on an entirely other game show, being taped more or less the same time in a nearby studio for a rival network. When he was a student at Trinity College, where students were not permitted to keep dogs as pets, what animal did the poet Lord Byron keep instead? A bear, Kay asks. Aviva's head approximates a short nod. The Japanese invasion of Manchuria. The bus driver's voice announces that in order to avoid some sort of snarl up ahead, they're going to go off the highway for a little while and take an alternate route. After a pause comes a reminder that regardless of what night it happens to be, open alcohol is not permitted on the bus. That's the policy of the bus company. And it's not entirely clear that the driver isn't being ironic, and someone, probably not the heavy cougher from before, gives a whistle. A moment later, the cougher coughs at length. No, Aviva does not actually look like the pyromaniac from the ward. For one thing, her hair isn't long and flowing, and her skin is clear. And the blue eyes, though maybe the other girl had blue eyes too, and Kay can't remember. So I guess you didn't win the grand prize on the game show. It's not a question. Aviva laughs, and Kay is impressed by the sound, like something dainty falling apart. Not exactly, but it did get me noticed, unfortunately. And at the time, I thought that getting noticed was all that really mattered. Kay is now listening so as not to think of anything else. The bus gives a little bump on the turn, which prompts a couple of merry passengers to cheer, and snow dashes against the window. She listens to this Aviva woman tell her impossible life story, or at least highly edited portions of it. How often has she done this? Listen to other life stories, but don't think about that. And besides, Aviva isn't complaining, as most do, clearly the point of the exercise for them, and her life story is more interesting than most. And the other thing is that Aviva isn't prying. That would be worse than a life story, and in fact, every so often, Kay can see the woman looking her over with curiosity or something and refraining from prying. So that's appreciated. Wait, what was that about doctors? Tests. Nothing but tests, months and months, different machines with different wires in different rooms, trying to determine the proximity of me to someone else not talking to me whose questions I provided the answer for. Not all of them doctors, but then again, some of them don't say exactly what they are. They tell me the answers aren't always right, and I say, well, how can you tell? If you have an answer and you go looking for a question for which it fits, you're probably relying very much on the assumption that there's a question which the words that came out of my mouth not only answers, but answers correctly. If Kay is honest with herself, which does happen now and again, she generally prefers the mad. They're more varied. And of course, therein lies the complexity and the danger too. Normal people are bad, with very few exceptions, and predictable, with almost no exceptions. They're also determined to know how I do this, what it means. They hypothesize about the warping of some psychic field and test out that set of drugs as inhibitors or that frequency of radio signal, and it gets so tiring because they don't figure anything out, but there are always more hypotheses and more tests. It got so tiring, Kay. She rubs her eyes with both hands and, still rubbing them, says, there's quite a difference, don't you think, between getting somebody's attention and having somebody's attention? Now that's a question. I don't know. Sweet Jesus, shouts another passenger. Her voice is followed by the cougher, who goes on for a full and dreadful 2 minutes. Madness aside, or maybe not, what if our thoughts and words aren't our thoughts and words, but somebody else's, and they somehow slip into our minds and even come out of our mouths? Like giving him hell. Exactly. And the way we dialogue with ourselves, maybe it's not ourselves, not alone, that is. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. In May, I bolted. They didn't expect it because I had been such an obliging subject for so long. But I watched for an opening and I took it. Been bouncing from one place to another since then, though they're never far behind. They're following you, Kay says, without meaning to. No less than 36%, says Viva. I think I'm going to close my eyes and try to get a little sleep. Kay automatically stretches her headphones over her head before remembering that the Walkman's batteries are dead, and she takes them off. And she thinks of her mother, or doesn't so much think about her, but conjures her up, or passively allows whatever her mother has been trying to enter her mind to do so. And her mother fills her in the way the body might fill in a shirt it comfortably buttons up in the morning sunshine. Her mother's shirt, the yellow one. Did her sister get that one? She might ask if they can get through the apologies they owe each other after that last phone attempt. Long staring into darkness. This is a skill I've developed. Long staring into darkness. What time is it? The bus driver's voice descends again from unseen speakers to announce that they are nearly at the station and to remind all passengers to take all of their belongings with them. Belongings is a weird word. That's something her mother would say, a weird word. In the ward, that's where they took away your belongings, like the lighters. Weird word, ward. Kay? Aviva's awake. Kay wonders if she, Aviva, slept. She wonders if she, Kay, was sleeping. I wonder if you might do me a little favor. But of course, you shouldn't ask me what it is, because then I wouldn't be able to answer. I'll just keep talking like I was doing before, just to block questions, and you've been such a sweetheart about that. I'll just explain what I'd like you to do, and you can decide for yourself whether or not you want to do it. After a moment, Kay nods. I'm going to change seats, move up closer to the front. I can't be sure, but it's very likely that they're at the station waiting for me. Do you understand? Kay nods again, though this time it does not seem necessary. But she is almost undoubtedly nodding because Aviva's hand is on her arm, and she hasn't flinched, and she doesn't know why that is. When the door opens and people start getting off the bus, I want you to scream. Scream loud and long, like you're having a fit. I need a distraction so I can get out, and I need you to act like a raving lunatic. Can you do that? Kay might be nodding, but it doesn't matter, because Aviva has already grabbed her duffel bag and is heading up the aisle, asking whispered patrons of the jutting elbows and legs she disturbs as she goes along. Is that the sound of a cork popping? Insufficiently muffled, giggling. Resolved, Kay needs a watch. What kind of watch? Don't! A suicide watch? What did I say? Got a million of them. The bus is slowing, carefully gliding from intersection to intersection, sniffing its way home. It's too dark out there to be sure whether it's still snowing or not. Kay thinks about the arguing couple at the station back in Kingston. Neither of them dressed for the weather. Maybe Aviva could have picked up the signal and conveyed what they were saying. If they were asking questions, that is. Maybe the whole argument was the result of something like cross signals. Like she was asking him something and he had the wrong answer because Aviva or someone else was speaking his answer, what he meant to say, to someone else. Like a play, or really a bunch of different plays where some of the actors in each play have the wrong scripts. And what did you say to your mother that last time? And what did she say to you? The lights start at the front and quickly extend the reach to the back of the bus. People are already standing, collecting those belongings, and one young man, his eyes wet and face flush with illness, surely he's the cougher, turns to look back at her. Her mouth is open, but her eyes are not closed, and why is that? Is she going to scream, really? Does she intend to scream? Is that what you intend to do? To play the mad woman, the behest of a mad woman? No, because she's already screaming. Really screaming. Screaming her head off. She can hear it. Everyone can hear it. It is 1989. Thank you. You know, I remember reading that Graham Greene, the British novelist, would write 500 words a day. Or maybe it was 1,000, I forget. But and he would write 500, and he just made that discipline. Even if the next day he cuts him out, you had to write another 500. And I admire that, but I'm just not that organized. And the muse, she doesn't sing like when I want her to. So, you know, I can be sleeping and suddenly wake up at 3 in the morning and I, you know, you get pulled to the table and you've got to work. So I wish I had a regular regime. I'm sorry. Well, I mean, there's a lot of bad pages that one has to get out of oneself, right? Maybe more for me than for you, I don't know.